If you would open up your Bibles to the 16th chapter of Genesis. We're in Genesis 16. I think it's been about 3 weeks since we've been here. So we'll probably give just a little bit of background to kind of get you up to speed. But as I was reading this chapter, it just reminded me of, you know, when you were younger, sometimes you would go on a journey or a trip, and, you know, you didn't have quite the technology with GPS and phones and things that we have available to us today, and you would just go by the direction they had told you. And as you'd be going, you'd be seem like on this road for quite a while. And how far did they say it was? How long before we get there? Were we supposed to turn? What about this fork in the road? It looks like everybody's going this way. You know, and as soon as you look at the tracks, and as soon as you make that turn, you realize you've messed up. You've made a mistake. And once you get on that road that you shouldn't have been on, there's a dozen twists and turns, and you end up backtracking. You end up off course. You end up lost. All because you begin to second guess. You let your perception change what you know you should be doing. And it reminds me of this chapter, as we'll see here. But to give a little bit of background, God had called Abraham out of the land of Ur. He had promised to bless Abraham. He had promised to provide for Abraham. He had promised to protect Abraham. And he had led Abraham into the land of Canaan. And they had been in the land of Canaan for about 10 years. And as the Lord had led them there, he led them not just into the land, he led them through the land. And he told them, to your offspring, I will give you this land. But Abram had no offspring. Abram at this point had no offspring. And here in Genesis 16, he had been in the land that was promised to his offspring for 10 years. He had been on this road for quite a while. Did he misunderstand the promise? So he reasons back in chapter 15. I believe that's where he was going in chapter 15 when he says, I continue childless. You know, and the heir of my house is Eliezer. Behold, you have given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir. And then the Lord answers, this man, Eliezer, will not be your heir. Your very own son will be your heir. Quit whining about the one. Just trust me, Abram. You will not even be able to count your descendants. I've got this handled. So at this point, chapter 16, the Lord had promised an offspring to Abram three times. He'd done it in chapter 12, chapter 13, and chapter 15. Yet they've been waiting 10 years. And so the title, just to kind of maybe help you bring to mind or give you a sense of where we're going, is A Blurred View of God's Way. They knew God's way. They just had a blurred view. They were letting their optics, they were letting their perception and what they saw blur what God had told them. So let's jump in chapter 16. We'll read the first verse and we'll start picking it apart. Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. So right here, chapter 16, verse 1, we're introduced to two women. Sarah is Abram's wife. We've had her mentioned up to this point. She's been mentioned several times in the previous chapters. And up to this point, she's been given two descriptions. One, she is a very beautiful woman. We read about this in chapter 12, verse 11. And two, she is childless, or she is barren. The Lord had closed her womb. We read this in chapter 11, verse 30. And then out of the blue, we're introduced to Hagar. Just out of the blue, you wonder, why are they even talking about her? Why would you mention that Sarah has a female Egyptian servant named Hagar? And she's given, you know, three descriptions, female Egyptian servant. And we assume, and it's probably safe to assume, that Hagar was obtained during their stay in Egypt. You know, when they fled to Egypt during the severe famine, and they left with many servants. She was most likely one of those servants. So here we are, introduced to Sarah, introduced to Hagar, verse 2 and 3. And Sarah said to Abram, "Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant, that it may be that I may attain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And you see, she starts off here. She goes to Abram. She says, "Look, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children." You know, Sarah does see being childless as a result of God. And this is true. You know, God is sovereign over all this. You know, we'll read in a few chapters where they're in the land of Gerar, I believe, and the Lord closes the wombs of everyone in that whole city on their account. But this isn't simply just Sarah acknowledging the Lord's sovereignty. This actually reads as more of a complaint. And so she's a little bitter, and she goes. She says, "Look, go into my servant, Hagar, that I may attain children through her." Now, this was the idea of what we call a surrogate mother. Just a little primitive in the way they went about it. But in Abram's day, this may have been the cultural norm. This may have been the custom in these days, but that does not make it right. You know, Abram was actually called out of cultural norms. You know, he was set apart. In a similar way, we are called out. We are set apart. We're not to be like the world. So maybe Sarah and Abram believe in God's promise. Maybe they believe what God had promised. They just had a blurred view of this. Maybe they believe in it. They just need to help God out. You know, the Lord helps those who help themselves, right? Well, that's unbiblical. You know, biblically, the Lord helps the helpless. That's the way it works. And, you know, I want to clarify this because I know we say it quite often about we are responsible. You know, we'll say God is sovereign and we're responsible. But that's not saying that we're responsible to find a way. We're responsible to devise a method that helps God's will come to pass. We're not trying to help God along the way. We're responsible to be obedient. That's what we mean when we say that. God is sovereign, we're responsible, but we're responsible to obey God. So Abram here, since he's been, you know, the Lord has instructed him three different times, he's about to rebuke Sarah for her lack of faith. Why wouldn't he? Like I said, the Lord had spoken to him on several occasions, and the Lord had actually even appeared to Abram in the last chapter. But Abram doesn't do this. And Abram has what I call at this point what it seems to be immature faith. Like the rest of us. His faith is immature at this point. And Abram had these dark moments, you know, these dark times when he just didn't completely seem to trust God. You know, like the account in chapter 12 of the severe famine. When the famine came and the famine was severe, they do what? They run. They flee to Egypt and they lean on Egypt to provide. You know, it seems here they didn't believe God was going to provide a son through their marriage. So again, they lean on Egypt to provide. And in this case, it's an Egyptian servant named Hagar that they lean on to provide the son. You see, they believed God's promise. They just had a blurred view. Just they let their circumstances alter what they knew God had instructed them to do. And as young Christians, our faith may be weak at times. You know, as babes in Christ, we are immature. But as we mature, we become firm in our faith. Our faith will not be shaken. Actually, Psalm 62, I'm going to read that. You want to turn there, you can. You know, we're going through Psalms, so we'll be here in, I think, 5 or 6 years. Psalm 62, I'm really going to read the first verses 1, 2, and then actually 5, 6, 7, they actually have a little stanza that kind of says this. For God, this is David, for God alone my soul waits in silence. From Him comes my salvation. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. Verse 5. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. For my hope is in Him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rest my salvation and my glory. My mighty rock, my refuge is God. So here, David is crying out that his soul was waiting on God, because it's from God that comes his salvation. From God is where his hope is found. And God is his rock and salvation, his fortress, and his faith would not be shaken. And you may say, man, I want to have that faith that just won't be shaken. So how are we matured? You know, we talk about Abram being immature. How are we matured? We're matured through God's Word. You know, we read this in 2 Timothy 3:16. All Scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, that the man of God may be mature, equipped for every good work. You know, we are to study, pray, to be matured so our faith won't be shaken, so we can be mature in our faith. You know, the Abram we see here in chapter 16 is not the same Abram we see in chapter 22. In chapter 22 is when he's taking his only son, the promised son, up to offer him up to the Lord, up there to sacrifice him. And he did that, we can read in Hebrews 11, because he knew, he considered that God was even able to raise him from the dead. That's where his faith had matured to. But here we just see an immature Abram. But the Abram we see here is still a child of God. The Abram we see here is still counted as righteous. We saw that in chapter 15. So just because his faith isn't chapter 22, he's still righteous. He's still considered righteous through Christ. Immature, although God had spoken to him three times. Again, and you may say, well, if God has spoken to me once, I would have believed it. Okay, all right. You know, God hasn't audibly spoken to you. Instead, God had it written down and given to you. Do you believe it? Well, don't hold Abram to a standard you don't keep. So maybe you're thinking I'm being unfair with Abram. Maybe you think Abram's faith is perfect. Just to show you, I don't believe so. In the next chapter, and I don't mean to get into Jacob's chapter, in chapter 17, verse 17, you know, the Lord had told him here that he was going to give Sarah, his wife, a son. And then Abram in verse 17 fell on his face and laughed. Shall a child be born to a man who's 100? And Sarah, who is 90, is she able to bear a child? You know, he just laughs. Lord, do you realize I'm 100 years old? Do you realize my wife is 90? Just use Ishmael. You know, it reminds you of Moses when the people are wandering in the wilderness and they get frustrated with eating the bread, or they're just tired of the manna and they want meat. And God said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you meat. Not just for one day, not 2 days, not three. You'll have meat for a whole month and you'll be sick of the meat. And then Moses is like, whoa, 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 Lord. You know there's like 600,000 men. That ain't counting women and children. It's probably 3 million. You're saying you're going to give meat to eat, Lord. You know there's 3 million of them? And that's when the Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's hand shortened? Basically, is there anything I can't do, Moses? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. So that's what we really have here. You know, Abram, I think, is just still, look, I'm 100. My wife is 90. And God's like, look, is there anything I can't do, Abram? Just wait and see. Just wait and see. Now, before we move on, I know you're thinking, move on, we're only in the third verse. The rest of this goes a little faster. But before we move on, there's some Hebrew wording here in chapter 16 that is only used in one other place. I'll see if you can pick up on it in the English. Genesis 16:3, it said, Sarah took Hagar and gave her to Abram. Right? The only other place that's really read that way is Genesis 3. In Genesis 3, we read where Eve took the fruit and gave to Adam. In Genesis 3, we see Adam listen to the voice of his wife. Here, Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. Now, I'm not trying to make a connection between Hagar and the forbidden fruit. I'm not, don't do that. But I'm just saying Sarah took something, gave to Abram, and he listened. We see Eve doing the same thing. She took something, gave to Adam, and he listened. Now, the exact wording is only used in these two accounts. So many think the author here is making a connection between these two accounts. And again, I'm not. This isn't a good place to go to and say, never listen to your wife. I'm not saying that. Although, I guess we could make it say that. But anyway, you know, if you look in Genesis 3, Satan had deceived Eve. Satan had deceived Eve and caused her to believe God was something holding something back. That God don't want you to eat the fruit because he knows when you do, you will be like him. God's holding something back. What do we see happening here with Sarah? The Lord's prevented me from bearing children. The Lord's holding something back from me. And then you actually see in Genesis 3, did God actually say? You know, did God really say? And then here, you can see, did God really say that the child would come through you, Sarah? You know, we knew Abram would have the child, and it would be his very own son. It would come from his loins, but did God actually say it would be you? He's holding, you know, there's just some similarities here. But it seems like both of them at this point ceased to rely on God's power. And instead, they relied on their own power to attain a son. They had a blurred view. So Sarah takes Hagar and gives her to Abram as a wife, we read at the end of verse 3. Verse 4 through 6. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me. But Abram said to Sarah, behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please. Then Sarah dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. Look, Hagar was not Abram's concubine. She was actually Abram's wife, given to him as a wife. She was to be Sarah's representative, the surrogate mother she was looking for. She would now hold the highest place in the household next to Sarah. Yet she would continue to be Sarah's servant. But when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on Sarah with contempt. She began to think of herself as better and greater than Sarah. She felt exalted above her mistress. You know, an example of this is in 1 Samuel 1, where we have Hannah and, what is it, Peninnah. You know, one is barren, one can't have any children, and the other one has several sons and daughters. And it says that she, Peninnah, used to look at Hannah and provoke her, just to irritate her. You know, but we talked about this morning in Sunday school, you know, what do you have that the Lord didn't give? You know, Hagar's thinking this is something that she, you know, she's getting proud in this. And she bitterly charges Abram for this. And throughout this passage, Sarah never even refers to Hagar by name. She really only refers to her as my servant. So Abram here places Hagar under the authority of his wife, Sarah. Now, whether he's avoiding the responsibility or this was the proper thing to do in this day, it's hard to know. Commentators go both ways. Being that Hagar was Sarah's servant, most lean that way. But it does seem a little sheepish. No doubt this was a sticky situation for Abram. But had Abram protected Hagar, this would have fed Hagar's pride. And at the same time, it would have left Sarah feeling even more rejected or replaced. So Abram put Hagar into the hands of Sarah. And Sarah deals harshly with Hagar, and she flees. I'll read the rest of the chapter. Then the angel of the Lord found her, Hagar, by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen." So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore the well was called Beer Lahai-Ro. It lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. So you see, she fled because Sarah was harsh to her, and when the angel of the Lord came to her, he came to her when she was by a spring on the way to Shur. Now, we don't know where this is, I mean, me and you, but commentators place this on the return trip to Egypt. She was going back home, it seems. She was making a return trip to Egypt when she sat down by a spring of water, and the angel of the Lord came to her. Now, this is the first time we see this phrase, the angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord here instructs Hagar to return to Sarai and submit to her. Now, this may imply that Hagar most likely wasn't very submissive to Sarai after she became pregnant. She most likely wasn't very submissive, you know, when she was promoted to the secondary wife. But she's told here to return to her mistress and submit. The Lord here tells her that she's pregnant with a son, and she shall call his name Ishmael. This is the first person in the Bible whose name was given by God before birth. You know, we're told of this in other places. You know, Ishmael, Isaac is going to be named by God before birth. John the Baptist is named by God before birth. Jesus is named by God before birth. And there may be a couple others. But here, Ishmael would be the first who was named by God before birth. And then we're given a prophecy of the type of man Ishmael would be and the type of descendants he would have. And then when you get to verse 12, it talks about him be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone, everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. When I read this, it just made me think, unless I'm misreading this, there will never be peace in the Middle East. Not until the Lord returns. You know, it may be somebody making bridge this gap, but it's just going to be a temporary fix. You know, there'll never be any true and lasting peace because these people here are going to be against everyone, and everyone's going to be against him. He's against his brother Isaac as soon as his brother's born. You know, he's just against everyone. These Arab people here are just never going to live in peace with the people of God. So there will never be peace in the Middle East. So she names her son Ishmael, or Abram names his son Ishmael, and he's 86. This is the first son he had. He had been in the land about 11 years at this point. But as we read through this, it's pretty easy to see what happened. And there's a lot of things we don't know about, you know, the customs of the times. And, you know, was Abram right when he did this with placing Hagar in Sarah's care or not? We just don't know some of those things. But how can we apply what we have learned? Well, we need to learn to be patient. We need to learn to wait on the Lord. And that's difficult in the generation and culture we live in. If we sit in a drive-through line 3 minutes, you know, we're almost honking the horn wondering what's going on. You know, but Hebrews 6:12 tells us to be imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. We're called to be patient. You know, you read of King Saul in 1 Samuel 13. You know, as he's on his way, Samuel told him, I'm going to come and offer these sacrifices to the Lord. And Samuel and Saul just gets impatient. And so Saul offers these sacrifices to the Lord. And then, sure enough, Samuel comes. What have you done? And then basically tells him that the Lord is going to tear the kingdom from him and give it to a man after his own heart. And he's referring to David when he does that. David was anointed to be king by Samuel. And yet David waited about 25 to 30 years before that promise was ever fulfilled. And David had several opportunities to kill Saul and to take the throne. But instead, David patiently waited on the Lord. So we do need to learn to be patient. We don't need to, again, have our view of the Lord's way blurred with the optics of what we see. So is there a messianic message in this? How does this tie into the big picture of Jesus Christ? Actually, Galatians 4 helps us with this, if you want to turn there. We won't be here long. Galatians 4, 24 talks about two covenants. These women, talking about Sarah and Hagar, represent two covenants. In Galatians 4, verse 22, it says this, "It is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman," that's the one we just read about, "and one by a free woman," that's Isaac. We will read about him in the coming chapters. "But the son of the slave was born according to the flesh, while the son of the free woman was born through the promise." So the one of the slave woman was Hagar, and the son was Ishmael. One was born according to the flesh. One was born the natural way. One was born trying to accomplish God's will the natural way, trying to please God through our works. See, Ishmael was the product of self-reliance. They didn't have to rely on God to have Ishmael. They tried to attain God's blessing through their own strength. That's Hagar, Ishmael. That's the law. That's Mount Sinai, as he mentions here. But the other, Sarah, the mother and son, Isaac. Isaac was not born according to the flesh. He was born according to the promise. One was born according to the promise. Faith in the promise. One requires faith. One requires God to act. One requires the power of God. And we can say that because Romans 4 tells us that Abraham was as good as dead since he was about 100 years old. And when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb, or the deadness of Sarah's womb. So Abraham's body was as good as dead, according to Romans 4. And his wife's womb was dead. And God was going to cause life to come out, the promised son to come out of that seed. One required faith. And see, in Galatians, what's going on here is these Galatian teachers are trying to put them back up under the law. So these false teachers here are teaching them how to be a child of Abraham. The problem is they're just teaching them how to be children of Ishmael. A child of works, a child under the law, a child born enslaved, a child born under the curse. That's why Paul here asked in verse 21 of chapter 4, "Tell me, you who desire to be under the law, do you not listen to the law? Have you ever read the law? Why would you want to be under the law? Why would you want to be a child of the curse, a child of the flesh, a child of work. Why would you not want to be a child of the promise? The works of the flesh will be cast out. We will read this in Genesis. God rejects the works of the flesh. We can only come to God through faith. And so bringing a child from a woman, I'm sorry, from a man who was 100, who was as good as dead, and his wife was 90, and she was barren, and past the age of childbearing, that was something only God could do. Bringing a child from a virgin, that is something only God can do. Living a perfect life that completely satisfied the wrath of God is something only God can do. Bringing someone who is spiritually dead to life is something only God can do. But obeying Him, trusting Him, waiting on Him is something we must do. See, by our own strength, by our own ingenuity, like we saw here, by our own effort, we will never please God. It's through faith and patience that we please God. Obey, trust, wait. For He is a God who sees. That's what it says in the 13th verse of that chapter we just read. You know, He is a God who sees. Obey, trust, and wait on the Lord. If you would, please stand. Darrell, would you close us out, sir?